Okay, okay. A bunch of movie lovers out there, I get it. You just couldn't handle the power, okay? You couldn't handle Jonathan Movie's power. Here's how it's gonna be from now on. $89.99 a month. I don't care what the stockholders say. $89.99 a month. You get to watch two movies, tops. They have to both be animated. No action movies. You also have to only buy DVDs from now on. I don't know how we're gonna enforce it, but you people need to learn. This is Jonathan Movie. Signing off. Fuck.
Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man. And more importantly, that was a special message from Jonathan Movie, the CEO of MoviePass. And it was a genuine message and not any kind of satire of any sort. All right. Who is that from, Bryce?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Someone on the internet, Gus Johnson on YouTube.
Okay, good. I just wanted
to get Jonathan Movie, Bryce. That's the appropriate answer.
We should have run with it. We're
CEO
like
CEO of MoviePass.
That's a real Jonathan PR Movie. Announcement from MoviePass.
You thought his name was Mitch something? No, Jonathan.
Nah, Mitch. Speaking of satire,
yeah, man, we have a special guest joining us. Is Sean DePasquale? I hope I said that right. Editor in chief of BunnyEars.com. You guys may know that for a while you haven't been keeping up with Macaulay Culkin. Turns out he's enlightened. And is willing to enlighten you if you go to BunnyEars.com, the number one, my personal favorite satire website on the entire freaking internet. You guys are crushing it over there, man. How many articles are you guys doing like per minute?
Well, we have over 500 pieces of content up, and we launched in March.
All right, well, okay. We launched in January with the model.
All right, all right. Quit measuring your inches.
We only have 100 pieces of content.
We put out, we started out by releasing two pieces of content a day, 7 days a week. Now, 3 days a week, release three pieces of content. And we're going to start adding some videos and stuff.
You guys are crushing it. I love everything about the website. And I'm so thankful for you to join us. For those who, the uninitiated, you came out with Macaulay Culkin to join us for the two episodes of The Modern Rogue.
That's right.
It was so much fun being there on set.
Yes.
And the riffing. And it was Sean. Mm-hmm. Half of the stuff that we did in the blood spatter episode was Sean saying like, hey, have you thought about, you know, what if you did this? And we're like, that's brilliant. We're going to do it. So if you like that episode, it's all because of Sean.
I mean, thank you, but that's not true. We had a good time. It was a collaborative effort, and that is indicative of everything that we do at Bunny Ears, which Bunny Ears behind the scenes is really all about a big collaborative sort of group effort to like make all of the things that we enjoy come to life. And like the guy from Home Alone is helping us do all of that because he's also into doing that kind of thing. And it felt very much like anything that we sort of get involved with and do. And that's that like everyone's encouraged to sort of do what they do best. And then hilarious, awesome stuff happens.
I'll tell you this much. There's only one regret I have, and I can tell it's going to be a long-standing one, is everybody saying, when is Macaulay going to be back on the show? But we'll get to that after we talk about our primary target.
That's your regret?
Yeah. Is that everybody loves him.
All right, folks. The Oscars are adding a new award. Here's what we know. The Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences announced it will add an award for, quote, outstanding achievement in popular film starting in 2019. Films in this new category will still be eligible for consideration as best picture. It's not like you have to pick one or the other. And the Academy hopes the award will celebrate, quote, broad-based consideration of excellence in all films. Here's what we don't know. Anything else? There's no details on how you get selected, what constitutes popular, who gets to vote on it, or anything else. All we know is for the next Oscars in 2019, They want to add this new category called Achievement in Popular Film, Brian.
I'm going to guess that Sean has
like
a take. Yeah, okay. Well, okay. Spoiler alert, that's Sean's take. Okay, for those who don't know, the way the Oscars are picked is that you have a clubhouse of a bunch of actors, and they all vote who's the best actor in their...
Well, it's producers and editors and all of that, too.
Whatever.
It's the everybody who makes movies...
Sure.
Put together.
Old white people.
So this feels extraordinarily condescending to me. And I think it is a reaction to the fact that that if you look at the last 10 Best Picture Award winners, I believe 50% of them, I haven't checked this, but I believe 50% of them, the theme of the movie is hooray for actors. They're very important. And this is them maybe acknowledging that this weird circle jerk that they're doing is maybe not the healthiest
thing. It's actors. You keep saying actors, but I think you
Hollywood.
Can say exactly
Hollywood.
The same thing. And it's all about directors and producers too. It's all like hooray for us, the filmmakers, not movies.
Correct.
Films.
I believe that what has happened is over the last few years, the movies that make the most money are the movies that never show up at the Oscars. This is not complicated. Like, go look at the last 5 years of Oscars, and the movies that were the most popular movies that year weren't there because nobody gives a shit, because it's just a superhero movie or it's just a genre film. And so there's this feeling that those films are somehow less than, and that the performances in them are somehow less than, when frankly, there have been some phenomenal acting performances in many a Marvel movie over the last couple of years. And the fact that those don't also get thrown into the mix, and then to create a side category. Also, I like how the Black Panther cast was the picture that they chose to use there, because you know that like if it's a movie with a bunch of black characters and they're all superheroes and someone wears a costume, like there's no way the Academy is going to vote on that movie. And that's
so I have a theory.
Tragedy.
I have a theory on all this. I think this is a correction or an attempted correction of something that was very wrong that happened 10 years ago. I think that the actors in James Cameron's Avatar, say what you will about, you know, yes, it's Fern Gully with amazing whatever, but there was it is one of the biggest box office grosses of all time, one of the biggest, most watched movies of all time. And yet at that time, there was this sense in Hollywood. And by the way, Sean, you're closer to this than I am, so you may have a take on this. But there was a sense that I picked up on that everybody was afraid, like, oh, so we're all replaceable. You just draw your cartoons and then you don't need an actor or whatever. And Avatar was unfairly snubbed, because watching it recently, again, story aside, the acting, and I do mean the acting, because they did facial capture of everything,
yeah.
Is very, very good. All of the acting is very, very good in it, and it didn't deserve to get snubbed the way it did. It feels like, what are we, 8 years, 10 years after the fact? I don't know. However long we are after the fact, it feels like this is like whatever, you know, sure. Yeah, we'll give you a category.
And listen, I don't think that it's fair. I don't think that Josh Brolin did any less of a job playing Thanos than he did playing Cable or playing a non-superheroic role. Like, he didn't come in and, like, these actors aren't coming in and half-assing it, because the studios wouldn't be spending the money that they're spending if they felt, you know— The head of Marvel Studios, it is important to him that these movies are good, because he likes the films and he likes good movies and he likes comics. And so he wanted to see – that's why we're getting good comic book movies from Marvel Comics right now, is because there's a fan who is 100% making sure that, like, both the cinematic parts and the parts that really matter from the comics are being pulled together and are being respected.
So here's my counterpoint to you. My difficult conundrum, because on the one hand, because you and I seem to share the same frustration, do we feel like making a new category? On the one hand, you could say this is like a lesser than category. This is the kids club of popular movies or whatever. And you could feel like it's a less than Oscar. On the other hand, you could read this as finally they're acknowledging that these movies have merit and there should be one that receives an Oscar.
I'm not saying the movies have to win. I'm saying rather than see another category started to sort of like sweep them into, like if you look at the top movies this year that really were great movies, right? I would say that Black Panther is 100% amongst them. So if that movie doesn't end up as a Best Picture contender and instead they go, well, we don't have to make it a Best Picture contender. We can make it a contender for popular and then we can give it popular. It's like then they have robbed Black Panther, maybe the best chance that it ever could have possibly stood at being a Best Picture contender, because frankly, it was the best movie I've seen this year.
First of all, I got two fists and they're called Infinity and War. So, you know, come at me, bro. That's going to be a problem. But, I'll tell you what, you bring up a really good point. So for you, the problem is that it's a separate category. And even if Black Panther wins in that category, it feels like they invented a category just to keep it in its own clubhouse separate from, quote unquote, the real best pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the same with Infinity War, for that matter. Infinity War was also an amazing, it was a spectacle. It was an amazing feat of like complex storytelling that has literally never been done or attempted before in movies, right? No one has ever tried to tie 15 movies and 10, 25 years or 20 years or whatever worth of movies together in one. No one has done that. Show me where that's happened ever before. It has not, right? And this movie did that. But for that alone, it should be nominated for the Best Picture, because that's a phenomenal thing. And like we've definitely seen movies in the past that maybe weren't the best story or the best, you know, Titanic got a nomination for Best Picture. Okay. Like that movie had flaws, flaws.
Let me throw to both
iceberg
of you guys.
Sized holes.
Let me throw you guys, both of you guys, a counterexample. By that logic, there should be no Oscar for Best Animated Feature. Would you want to see that taken away?
I think that, differentiating animated from an animated feature is its own category. It's always been its own category. It is not a subgenre of films, right? Animation is labeled as animation. What you are told when you're walking into something that is animated versus something that is live action, there are terms to differentiate the two, right?
But also,
a movie is a movie, right? Like a live action movie is a live action movie.
Number one, those lines are blurring. Number two, I think maybe we're just becoming aware that different movies have different targets. For example, you know, Black Panther is aiming for a different target than Sorry to Bother You, and you could make credible cases if you want to lump them in the same category. It's very challenging to figure out which is the better of the two. But if you give them like, well, Black Panther was aiming for this and Sorry to Bother You was aiming for that, then all of a sudden it's very clear, you know, that they're best in breed in those things.
But do you think that maybe the solution here is to change Best Picture to something else.
Oh, that's great. Eliminate Best Picture altogether and instead
Because I think by implying that it's the best, that's where all of these other categories feel less than, right? Because
I love
you're saying this,
idea.
This is the best, but like this is popular and this is animated.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, because I agree with this, you could solve this by eliminating Best Picture and instead breaking it into three different general targets of really good pictures. You know, best, whatever. I don't want to be on the hook for whatever those things are. But that's really interesting. All right, Tom, how are you feeling about all this?
Oh, it's all about ratings, y'all. I mean, this is a great philosophical discussion, but the problem is they want people to watch the telecast. And so a few years ago, they decided, you know what? All we're getting are the five pictures that came out in December that really pushed for Oscar nominations. Let's expand it to 10 nominees. Then we'll get a few more from earlier in the year. And what you ended up getting is 10 pictures that came out in December that really pushed for Oscar nominations. And so what they're doing is saying, you know what? We're going to come up with a new category. It's going to put all the stuff in that people care about because we'll engineer the requirements so it has to include that stuff, and then hopefully people will watch the telecast and ABC will be happy and we'll keep being able to pay for this thing.
I love
because the other
idea.
Thing they're trying to do is keep it to 3 hours by putting some of the awards happening in the commercial breaks and then putting edited versions of them later in the show.
I'm okay with that.
Best cinematographer, that's going to happen in a commercial break, and you'll just see like a quick 20 seconds of the award. And the awards are going to start happening earlier in 2020. Again, it's a ratings move. This is all about TV.
When are they going to start? At 1 in the afternoon and go until midnight?
No, earlier in the calendar, not earlier in the day.
I'm totally okay with this because the Oscars as a show is a different entity than the Oscars as a respected awards authority. And I do think a time condensed versions of it that gets to the point, because I mean, this is something that we're our whole lives. We've been, you know, hearing music playing people off halfway through their speech or whatever. To
my favorite part.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite part. I like to watch people rushing. It's like a weird fetish I have.
I agree with a lot of what y'all were talking about just now, but the one just to throw a counterpoint out there. I mean, it is there, and this goes along with your idea of breaking it up into three categories. In music, we have something called pop music, and it's like this is the popular music. Then we'll have jazz, rock, R&B, rap, you know, et cetera. And maybe that is the way to go to say, you know, I can't remember though with the Grammys, is there a best record?
I think there's an album of the year.
Are they two separate things?
I believe.
But like, is Kanye not hip hop? But like, Kanye is also like the most popular.
You can win the pop
out a record
and in your subcategory, because pop is just like whatever was on the top 40.
Something can win both. But the idea
so Black Panther should be nominated for both.
And it could be. It could be.
But didn't they say it won't be though? Like,
no, they said you can be eligible for consideration for Best Picture and popular film.
Consideration doesn't mean that they're going to double.
Just means it's open, right? We're not excluding you from Best Picture if you also get nominated for
this
popular.
This is interesting. This is Hollywood gerrymandering, because it could be the case that now we've nominated Black Panther both for Best Picture and for Best Popular Picture, and now everybody who's sitting there looking at it like, well, I don't want to, you know, totally snub
it.
So I'll just write down popular, and now my conscience is clear, and I'm going to put down this other thing for Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to Animated. There was controversy about Animated when it first came out, because they're like, well, wait a minute, Fantasia should be considered for Best Picture, right? So now in the animated world, when's the last time you saw an actual animated film nominated for Best Picture? Because people do that. They're like, oh, well, that goes in the animated category.
So
see, guys, the problem here is that when the Illuminati started Hollywood back in 1924.
Yes.
And what they originally – when Illuminati and Q in 1924 first met to start Hollywood.
Yes.
Which would just really be a clever nickname and kind of distraction act for the pedophile ring that they were really going to run. But that's not what's important. That's not what's important here. What's important here is the Oscars. So anyway.
Let me tell you something, Sean. Listen, there's a lot of forces that are trying to shut down your talk, and I understand. And I really appreciate you calling in on this program. As a small independent program about cord killing, we understand that big Hollywood wants to shut us down.
What is this show?
Man, I could not find my copy of Illuminatus trilogy fast enough, so I guess we're going to have to appeal to the patrons. Which direction do you want the show to go in? We could appeal to that kind of money, or you could support us directly and keep us on the straight and narrow at patreon.com/cordkillers.
I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. Listen up. There's a lot of people who don't want us talking about cutting cords. There's big cable all over the place. You got Comcast. You got Spectrum that used to be Time Warner. Let's all face it. They were Time Warner. They're trying to shut us all down. An independent voice is what you need for your cord cutting entertainment. We believe you should be able to watch what you want, when you want, whatever device you please. And if you believe that, then head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Not only do you get your special own RSS feed with the pre-show, the post-show. Oh, wait, that's a different show. You get the show as spoiler in time and after talk, mm-hmm. all at cordkillers, patreon.com/cordkillers. Pierce. Oh, you found it.
Nice.
That's the source material anyway.
And we're back.
Yeah, so please, please help us out.
Illuminati with Brian.
While we tell you how to watch. So this is not nearly as exciting as a new Oscar category, but maybe it's exciting to you. Roku launched its free ad-supported streaming video channel on the web, as well as on Samsung smart TVs. So you can watch it even if you don't have a Roku device or a Roku-based TV. Company plans to roll it out to PCs, phones, and tablets too. And Roku updated the nav on its own devices to add a new section called Featured Free, which lets you see and click to watch free content no matter what channel it's on, even if you don't have the channel app installed. Variety previously reported Roku is planning to launch its own subscription channels market, similar to Amazon's add-on subscriptions for Prime Video. And in its earnings report, Roku reported a rise in average revenue per user of 48%, reported $526 million in profit versus $15.5 million loss for the same time last year. And the big part of its revenue growth is advertising, is services. It's selling things to people, selling advertisements, not selling the Roku devices so much anymore.
So this is not like a Pluto channel where you tune in and it's in the middle of stuff. This is all on demand, more like a Hulu channel, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is like a Hulu channel back when Hulu was free and you didn't have to pay for it at all and you just got ads.
Sure.
It's like that. And you know, it's got a different selection of content, obviously, but it's absolutely free, and it's a way to expand the revenue basis and put the barker out there for Roku, saying, hey, you like what you're seeing in this app? Come on over to the Roku. You'll get even more of the bit, or the same, but better.
So
it's like Crackle?
It's like Crackle if Crackle was the number one device that everybody used to access streaming content.
Well, and also Crackle had originals and stuff, right? Like, this is like Crackle without comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah. Right. So there's no exclusives here, you're saying. They're not going to do anything original.
Correct. But I think now that Roku is in a place where they seem to have, and I'm going to overstate here and forgive me this, but let's say for the sake of discussion, they've won the hardware wars. They are the favorite streaming device platform of all
them. They're the most
that.
Popular right now, for
right.
sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So it seems like it's weird that they wouldn't have their own channel, right? So this might be just like, hey, doesn't matter what it is, literally like, let's have a thing because we're number one in this one category. Let's also have at least some stake in the software category, basically.
And it's acknowledging that we may not want separate boxes for TVs forever, right? Like having the Roku app on the Samsung device says, well, look, one of our exit strategies is being an operating system for televisions, but we should also hedge our bets in case we don't win that war and have some kind of cord cutter option everywhere.
Dan Wally in the chat has it nailed. They should have called it Kraku.
Well, also that one dude who said that Roku is going to have to pay them to watch Matrix Revolutions again. That made me chuckle. Listen, it sounds, I don't know. I have a Chromecast and I've got YouTube TV, which is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Right.
I watch live TV. I love it more than anything in this whole world. It records all of the TV that I want. I have every episode of Shark Tank now. Forever.
Do you mind that, because we've talked about the Chromecast and one of the theories that we're playing with is the idea that part of the reason it hasn't caught on is because it requires two devices. You got to have something in your mobile device in your hand so that you can sling it, you know, basically to the Chromecast and go on. Whereas like Roku, part of its strength is like the monitor I'm looking at you at right now came built in for free with a Roku device on it. And everything's all in the same device. You don't mind that extra step of their
no, because thing? It's like having a remote control in my hand, especially because I use so like I don't use YouTube Red, you know, I use YouTube TV, right? Like their streaming service.
Yeah, they're full on cable light.
They're like cable service. Yeah, exactly. And so I just have my remote in my hand anyway, right? So like I tell my Google Home to turn on my TV, and then it turns on my TV, and then I just cast the thing I want, and then I can rewind or fast forward or skip to the next thing. So like, I don't know what I need it for.
So, okay. Let me, we've talked about this before. I'm going to throw out a guess here. I'm going to guess that you do not have a whole family, including children, that need to be able to access your, main display device.
My children, while they do not exist yet, will be smart enough to figure this out. Or how about this? Maybe they're not old enough to watch television yet without my guidance and help every step of the way.
I think that's probably the dividing line. Is like, I adore the fact that my kids understand how to use the PS4. They understand how to use the Roku. They understand how to use, I guess it's all Rokus. The Amazon, Fire system.
Yeah. Well, and then there's voice control aspects of stuff that sometimes the sticks aren't as good at when you have to pick up a phone to do it. But then voice control doesn't do everything. So, I mean, yeah, there's just it all kind of depends on what you're used to and what your preferences are, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I also have a PlayStation, and we have an Apple TV. And so, like, you know, if and when, you know, we do have children, like, you know, we will make sure that like there's some way for them to access television.
They will never grow past age three. And so they will always require your guidance.
You know, like I grew up with TV. TV is like my favorite thing in the world. So like, of course I'm going to, you know, raise my kids with access to TV. I don't know. I have not missed having, I have just really enjoyed using just my phone to like basically control everything that I watch, you know?
Sure, sure.
All right, well, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance. This is where we run through some of the news coming out about things you'll be able to watch soon, starting with Apple ordering a half hour. Well, I said soon. Who knows? But you'll be able to watch this first one. Apple has ordered a half hour comedy written by Rob McElhenney and Charlie Day of Always Sunny fame. McElhenney will take the lead as an employee at a video game studio. It'll be co-produced by Day and McElhenney's production company RCG, along with Lionsgate and Ubisoft, the gaming company. So it's about a gaming company. Get a little insight from them.
Okay.
Apple also ordered a series based on Min-Jin Lee's novel Pachinko. These are the latest, Brian, in the ongoing saga.
All right, Sean, if I'm going to assume you've not watched the last, 8 billion episodes of this show. It's sort of a perennial hit that Apple announces that they have great talent, and any minute now they're going to come out.
Almost 2 years running now, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I have not watched the show, but I don't think I have seen anything come from Apple TV yet at all.
Right. And they certainly have had no shortage of big names associated with it. Here's the one
that
breaks.
No show has come out.
They put out two shows.
They had a phase one and a phase two. Phase one was Carpool Karaoke and the horrible app show. Those were then that division that was responsible for them was then wound down, and they started this new division that has tons of talent associated. That second phase has not put out anything.
So here's the complicated place I am right now is up until this exact moment, I've been able to take the cynical role of like, you guys don't know what you're doing. It's nothing you're going to do is going to be good or whatever. But I deeply, deeply adore Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I deeply adore Charlie Day and Rob McElhenney. And I am... all of a sudden I'm conflicted. I'm like, now I want to be a believer, but I'm scared to be a believer.
I think it's highly more likely that they offered them all a lot of money and they said yes. And they were probably like, I hope this show comes out. Cause they're also all working on other things right now too.
Yeah. So another season of Always Sunny, like the 14th season or something. Yeah.
And he's on the other AP Bio thing. Is that still happening?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And she's doing a thing now again too, right?
Or she had a show on Fox.
I don't think she's involved in this Apple thing though. I think it's just Rob and Charlie.
That's a shame.
Yeah, no. But you know what? I bet they make guest appearances should this ever become a show on any kind of service that Apple provides someday.
That's right, the Mick. But that got canceled.
Along with Oprah and Steven Spielberg and all the others that have signed these deals.
All right, what else you got?
Axios is going to produce a limited run series of documentaries for HBO in the run-up to the U.S. midterm elections.
Now, This one, I believe, because Axios out of nowhere has become like the freaking jam of political. Like, I try to dial out of a lot of politics stuff, but my buddy Justin Robert Young does politics, and he's the one who was like, you got to read Axios. And everything, I know that HBO makes things that I watch, and I know that Axios makes things that I read. So this one I'm very excited about. How about you, Sean?
I'm big into politics, and I loved Last Week Tonight. So
oh, sure, sure.
This seems like a home run to me. Like,
what about the Aquabats?
I'm excited to see what they do.
Anybody a fan of the Aquabats? Or the
I am.
Aquabats
I'm a big
Super
ska
Show.
Fan.
Excellent. Aquabats are kickstarting a reboot of the Aquabats Super Show and accompanying albums. They want $1.110 million. $1,110,000. Or the price of a three-bedroom house in Glendale for the ability to kickstart the Super Show again.
Well, what is the Aquabats?
It's not just that. It's not just that. And because they're also going to release new albums, new music. Like, what you're I have contributed to this campaign already. And should I come into a large sum of money, I will contribute a vast amount more to this. I have a vested interest in promoting the Aquabats message. I love them. And frankly, I think that what they're asking for is basically like they are appealing to – they have a really large fan base. Part of that fan base is that they can reach out to the Yo Gabba Gabba fan base because the guy from the Aquabats, the lead singer, created Yo Gabba Gabba, right? So now that fan base has grown up. And now he's in a position where they can make a TV show and do basically whatever they want. And I think what they're doing here is trying to test the waters to see how big that fan base actually is and what they can do. And then just have enough money to go off and like do whatever they want.
So let's say I have this friend who's definitely not me, who confessed that he never saw the Aquabats. And I was like, I can't believe you've never seen the Aquabats, this friend of mine. I said, but then I blanked on how to explain it to them. How would you have handled that?
So the Aquabats started as a ska band in the 90s, but their whole bit was that they all dressed up like superheroes, and all of their albums and all of their songs are themed after like them as superheroes in sort of like a Sid and Marty Krofft-esque world where like they fight like monsters that are like kind of giant puppets in suits, right? And so they made music like this for years, and then the lead singer went off and created the Nickelodeon show Yo Gabba Gabba, which was a pretty popular thing.
Sure.
And then years later, they got a chance to do a couple of episodes, a handful of, I think, two seasons worth of the Aquabats show, and basically he got the whole band back together. They put on their Aquabats outfits, as you can see running here, and they went off, and in a very, I would describe it most like 66 Batman, right?
Sure, sure.
So it's just like very much them having campy fun. It's like 66 Batman meets like Power Rangers, basically, right? They're running around. They jump in the van. Then they go out to a place, and there's like, oh, a monster's there. And they defeat the monster. There's always original music.
So what also about the age demographic? Is this targeted to kids the way Yo Gabba Gabba was? Or I mean, because Yo Gabba Gabba was always cool because, you know, there was something there for adults. Like, I can't believe I'm watching what I'm watching. But it was mainly targeted as kids. More of the same, or is this specifically targeted to adults?
I would say it's a little more of the same, but not as young. It's not Yo Gabba Gabba was geared to very young children, appealed to like preschoolers, and I think that now 10 years later, right? Because like 10 years is enough for like a 2-year-old to now be 12, 13, 14 and looking into something of like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like there's more action-y elements to it. It's a little bit sillier. Like it's awesome.
Temporary side jag. The reason my voice is trashed is because I just spent 4 days at DEF CON with Jason Murphy, and every single person who came up to say hello, I was cringing because I was waiting for them to say, I used to watch Scam School when I was, and I would go, and then they would say in elementary school or in junior high or whatever. And I'm like, I'm old.
Yep.
2012 was when the Aquabats Super Show was out.
Yep.
I mean,
that was a long time ago. And then when did Yo Gabba Gabba start? Do you know that?
Oh, that was like early 2000s, right?
2006 or so. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to that too.
More than
Shark Fighter. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost's latest horror comedy, Slaughterhouse Rules with a Z at the end, is coming to theaters in the UK October 31st. Trailer's out now. Still no U.S. release date yet, but it's basically a commentary on the U.K. public education system, like a private school where there's a hellmouth basically opens up on the property.
Dude, quite literally, the trailer could be just text like Adult Swim style. Hello, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost have a new movie. You will go see it on this date. Bye. And then it's like, I'm in. I'd pre-buy my tickets.
Sean, do you agree?
I like those two guys. This trailer didn't quite do it for me, but I'll go see it because I love those two guys, and I hope that they interact a lot in this movie.
The live-action Sonic movie starring Jim Carrey as Dr. Eggman Robotnik has cast Ben Schwartz, Sean Raffio from Parks and Rec, as the voice of Sonic. Paramount expects to release the film November 15th, 2019.
Oh, love it. So this is live action plus animation hybrid kind of thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Like Avatar or whatever. Okay. That makes.
Yeah.
Me
I don't
feel
think Ben Schwartz will be out there being Sonic.
he can't do it.
He can't run that fast.
Maybe he will. I don't know.
He's an interesting voice actor.
It's just going to be him painted blue with like a Speedo on, and then they're going to speed up his legs.
It's going to look like what was it? Indian Superman or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's hilarious, and so that'll be cool, and I think it'd be cool to see if Jim Carrey goes full Grinch on this, I'm in. Like, if he's like, I want to have a bald dome head, and like, if he does like crazy makeup, I'm so in, because I love insane Jim Carrey.
Well, and plus also we're entering that phase, and we've talked about this on the show before, where it doesn't matter what your physical body looks like so much these days. I mean, we just watched Mission Impossible, where perpetually under 50 Tom Cruise is in there. I could totally see him bringing back like as exciting as he was in The Mask or any of his mid-90s work.
Yeah. Netflix announced Paul Rudd will play two roles in an 8-episode series called Living With Yourself. Rudd will play a man who decides to take a treatment to make himself a better person and then discovers that the treatment actually just replaces him with an improved version of himself. Kind of a clone, it sounds like. So Rudd will play both himself and the improved version.
So I can't.
Sounds cool.
So it's Multiplicity.
It sounds cool.
Hey, I thought this treatment was going to was going to make me better, but it just put a different version of me out there, and that's not me. And then I don't know if he escapes from somewhere to get out. I don't know.
That's actually shockingly close to the Orson Scott Card story, where there's a dude who just eats canceled. And treats his body like trash, and then shows up to get replaced with a better body, the story is, it's not replaced. There's the old version of him that has to go and work in a slave labor camp or whatever.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Paul Rudd's going to be funny, I hope. And then I'm in.
Yep.
I mean, he's funny sometimes.
My problem with Ant-Man and Wasp is that it wasn't quite funny enough. If that movie had just been a little funnier, I would have been like, I loved it. It was funny.
Well, and plus also, I was deeply hoping it to be a romantic comedy, and it was neither romantic nor a comedy.
Nor a comedy. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. They should have made like a genuinely like sweet, silly movie. And then they still could have at the very end. In fact, it would have been more bittersweet for him to have actually believably fallen in love and then to, spoilers, lose her in some way that might may or may not tie into Infinity, whatever.
Yeah. Also a genuine crime, underused Walton Goggins in that. Like, they should go to jail for not using him correctly. Anyway, we're done with that.
All right.
Let's talk about Eyes On. That's the new name of our What You're Watching segment. So, Sean, tell us a thing or things that you've watched recently that you loved.
I really love Harlots on Hulu. I really love The Tick. and I really love Bosch. I've watched all of those things recently, and I love them all. And which ones have you guys seen? Any of those shows?
None of those, but tell me, are you watching The Preacher?
Oh, I love The Preacher, too. Have you seen Preacher?
Preacher season 3 is making me realize that this is one of the best television anythings I've seen ever. Full stop. I'm still trying to figure out why I love it so much. And the latest analogy is that they're doing the equivalent of saying, oh, you got something on your shirt, and then getting you to look down and then poking you in the nose. And the only way to escalate that is to hire increasingly better writers, choreographers, cinematographers, better special effects, until to where you keep thinking like, okay, there's definitely something on my shirt this time. And then they're like, ha ha, gotcha. It's the best. It's the most fun show I've experienced in years.
They much like, did you read the comics ever?
No. And I've heard that everybody read the comics said, well, it can't be done. And everybody reads the comics and are like, well, that's not the comics, but you pretty much did it.
Yeah. That is the remarkable thing, is that it's not the comic, but I am getting to enjoy Preacher again in almost the exact same way that I got to enjoy it the first time in a new medium. And that is the first time I've ever experienced that with like a movie adaptation of a thing that I like, right? It's either too close to the thing, or it's like not quite enough the thing, or it's so alien that you don't recognize the thing anymore. And then it becomes maybe its own enjoyable thing, right? But this is like, it feels like the comic, but it's just as surprising as the original book was in all of the same ways, down to the fact that book 3 for me is when the series like cements itself as like the best thing of all time. It's when they go to grandma's, it's when all of that stuff happens, and like that's happening right now. And so the fact that this season is all starting to tie in all of the most interesting elements of the book and where the book goes from here, I'm fascinated to see what they do with the rest of the series. I hope that they get to do three more years.
What's interesting for me is when I talk to somebody who's familiar with the comic and I tell them about all of my favorite parts of the show, they're like, the hell are you talking about?
Tell me what your favorite parts are. I would love to. What is like your top favorite parts of the show?
Certainly in season 3. Actually, you know what? We'll save this for spoiler time. We'll talk about the latest episode in spoiler
time. Save it for spoiler time. Okay.
Yeah.
Because then we can actually talk about the scenes you love without worrying about spoiling it, because that's what that show is all about.
That's what we do.
We all like Preacher, and I think that counts for Brian's Eyes On pick as well. I'll throw in Better Call Saul, because it premiered last Monday.
Oh, I missed it.
And it's just nice to be back.
It was good.
I missed it. You're going to really spoil me when we do spoiler in time. Okay.
Well, I mean, we can wait.
No. You guys should spoil me.
Okay.
Did you watch it, Bryce?
I did. I watched it right before the show. Right before this.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Today, all right. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
To be honest, there isn't too much like major plot development in this first episode.
I figured there wouldn't be.
It's a lot of aftermath of the end of the previous
episode. Exactly. It's exactly. And not a lot of it is terribly surprising yet, but they're definitely moving some pieces into place.
Dude, by the way, Gauchem in the chat points out the new Voltron just came out. And that's one that I saved for me and my 14-year-old daughter. That's our special watch together. It's so, so good. It's better than you would expect. Start from the beginning. Watch all of Voltron. It's great.
Yeah, Voltron's cool as hell. And Better Call Saul is also great, although I will say, much like my favorite comics, I'm waiting for the trades on that one. I watch every season after it's done. I do not enjoy the experience of watching that show one episode at a time.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
And there are, we are slowly discovering, it's taken us about 10 years to figure this out, but for example, Westworld is one of those where everybody we know who watched it straight through loves it. Everybody who watches it week after week is agonized by the pacing of it.
Yeah.
All right. Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a letter from Bill. Let me double check. Bill, yes, we got a pick from Bill. He writes, The Looming Tower is a Hulu miniseries about the years of events leading up to September 11, 2001. This includes the CIA withholding information from FBI agent John O'Neill, who is investigating Al-Qaeda. John O'Neill is played by Jeff Daniels, and if you like Jeff Daniels' performance in The Newsroom and The Martian, as Bill did, this is a very similar performance. He highly recommends the series. That's Bill from near Athens, Georgia. Thank you, Bill. 10-hour-long episodes of The Looming Tower are streaming now on Hulu in the U.S., but Amazon Prime Video in the rest of the world. Hmm. So if you're outside of
Fake
the U.S.
Fake news. It's jet fuel can't melt steel beams. This whole movie is bullshit. And I won't hear of it.
I will say that The Looming Tower was an excellent book. I enjoyed it very, very much. Seeing the portrayal of Al-Qaeda, as Justin Robert Young puts it, the jihadist F troop of you know, jackasses who lucked into the right thing at the right time only because of ineffective communication between different departments is heartbreaking and terrifying, and knowing that it's all the real history, give or take, you know, through the lens of somebody is amazing.
Yeah. But there you go.
If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. All right. Real quickly, Brian and I always like to mention other projects that we're working on because that helps us be able to do this show as well. And of course, I have been writing the Principia Discord. Wait, no, that's not.
Oh, wait.
I've been writing Gallium and it's out. It's about a salvager in a system long ago mined out and abandoned by the Gallium Corporation. But when Maya finds an ancient ship buried deep on a moon, somebody tries to stop her. What did she find? Why do they want to leave it hidden? And should Maya risk her job and her life to make the salvage of a lifetime?
Hey, Tom.
Yeah,
how
Brian?
Long ago did Gallium come out?
I don't remember.
May 8th, so 3 months or so.
May 8th, Bryce tells me.
I am seeing a literal tragedy in front of my eyes that it only has 5 customer reviews. I don't care what you rate this book at. You
rate
need to... I'm not going to tell you to rate it 5 stars, although I'm sure
that
would be...
What Brian's trying to say is rate this book if you've read it, because if you do, it helps other people discover it.
Correct.
If you read it, you probably liked it, because I just heard about it and I want to read it now because I want to know, should she do any of those things that you suggested she would do?
Right.
Can you just give me like a little hint? Should she have done them?
I mean, I kind of think maybe, but you need to make that mind up for
yourself.
All
right, I'm gonna get the book. I'm getting the book and I will leave a review, and that's a bunny ears guarantee.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean. Be like Sean.
Right.
And go check it out. You can leave the review at tomsnewbook.com. That takes you straight to the Amazon page.
Great, great,
great.
All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Now, there are a few things that established media giants agree on. Two of them are, one, somebody needs to make bite-sized videos to compete with the likes of YouTube. And two, Jeffrey Katzenberg and Meg Whitman are the ones to do it. That's why Disney, 21st Century Fox, NBC Universal, Sony Pictures Entertainment, Viacom, Warner Media, Lionsgate, MGM, ITV, Entertainment One, and Alibaba, the company, have all teamed up to give New TV $1 billion in seed funding. New TV, which is a temporary name, planned to launch by the end of 2019 with a real name, with a premium lineup of original, high-quality, short-form series, so around 10 minutes each. The service will have 2 subscription tiers, an advertising-free plan and an advertising-light option, according to Whitman. The company will licensing programming and will not own or produce any of the shows itself. So it's basically Vessel all over again.
Okay, somebody, Sean, I'm gonna ask you a question. So somebody came up to me and asked, it was somebody who developed a successful company. This is at DEF CON, like literally yesterday. He's like, I made millions of dollars making this company or whatever, and I'm looking for my next thing. Why is it that people don't invest or in ways to make it easy for independent content creators to do X, Y, or Z or whatever? And I said, because the only thing companies / shareholders / investors care about is how big is the numbers of your platforms? How many people can you force to watch this? How big a dent in the universe can you make with the strength of your media fist? And I feel like this is the horrific evil Voltron of exactly that mentality being made, brought to life. And maybe something beautiful will come of it, but I'm not optimistic.
I can't stop thinking about the MoviePass guy and how, and how sad he seemed, you know, and frustrated. And like, yeah. It's like, guys, what did we want from them? You know, like, what did we expect from MoviePass, that they were just going to give us free movies forever? That's an insane plan. And it's almost like we as a community had a responsibility to say to them, like, no, this is a horrible idea and someone's going to lose their jobs. But we didn't. And we just took advantage of it. And now we've left someone broken.
Yeah, I think you sullied this whole idea, Tom, by saying the V word. I don't think Vessel went very well.
But maybe this time?
Meanwhile, the information says NBC Universal is considering launching a streaming service that pays you in gift certificates to watch shows.
Like Matrix Revolution.
Watchback would supposedly let you watch single episodes of NBC and Bravo shows, as well as some news clips, in order to drum up interest in the shows. Might also pay for it might also play shows from other networks. This sounds to me like, as insane as it sounds, like I was just in Vegas walking up and down the strip, and there was somebody slapping a fistful of coupons saying like, hey, who wants to pick the next big NBC show? You know, like that data, that feedback, that how long mm-hmm. you're watching, like, you know, you are the product in that situation to help determine what's going to work in the real world.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Give me money for, you know, there's an app on my phone. It's a Google app that like just sends you surveys. And then every time you do a survey, they give you like 15 to like 75 cents, you know? And like, I'll just like mindlessly do them. And then like, they'll go like, you have like $42 in credit in the Google store. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. So yeah, pay me to just sit here and watch stuff. I'll do that all day. That sounds great. Love it.
Yeah. And it's a marketing plan. Like, this is not NBC Universal's Netflix competitor or Disney live streaming competitor. This is just a way that they're saying like, hey, wait a minute, this will help us make better shows. So
even if it is a competitor, look, if I have to choose between making $5 an hour watching whatever crap they want me to watch and $5 an hour watching Netflix, I'll watch whatever crap they want me to watch. Capitalism, baby. We're in it.
I wonder how much, like, because you have to watch a half hour, an hour show. I wonder how much they're going to give you for that. That's interesting.
Oh, man, no. Strike it rich in the chat has it. You give plasma while you watch these shows and get paid. Double whammy.
Yep. I do that already. Efficient.
The LA Times figures Netflix released 88% more original programming so far this year than in the same span of 2017. And Fortune made a deal out of pointing out that research firm Seven Park Data found that more than 80% of Netflix streams were for licensed content, not the originals. Although that number comes from Q1 2017, before they released all this stuff. Ted Sarandos has argued before that older TV shows get higher volume on Netflix. He's like, yeah, they do, because we have more of them in our back catalog of episodes. But he says over time that will change.
I was just about to say that there's just more variety. Like, that's,
yeah,
this that, is a nonsense article.
That might be the case, but I do believe that the licensed content is an incredibly powerful advertisement. Like, I am still shocked at the number of comments on the Modern Rogue channel that are asking, what happened to your Netflix series hacking the system? And then I have to explain, well, you see, they rent them for a while and then the lease expires and then they go away or whatever. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Hollywood Reporter says Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth have not committed to the next Star Trek movie, claiming, or probably their agents claiming, that Paramount doesn't want to stick to existing deals. Paramount wants to keep the budget down and apparently argues that Star Trek isn't like Marvel or Star Wars when it comes to budgets. The movie is not being put on hold. What does that mean? Decode all of that Hollywood speak for me.
Okay. Here's what I will say. I know someone that was in the Star Trek movies, right? I know that for a fact that for the first two movies, this person got paid an amount that you would laugh at if you knew how much this person actually got paid, right? And that many of the persons involved in the cast were all on the same level there, right? So it is not a surprise to me that this is happening right now, because like, they do not want to pay these people money. And like, it's amazing to me how long this has dragged out, that like, they got them so good when they got them to sign for like the original you know, trilogy of movies that, like, now that, like, we're moving in, it'll be very interesting to see who actually comes back and who doesn't. This is 100% a negotiation tactic on the actor's behalf, like, releasing this story, right, obviously. And, like, but, like, here's the thing. Normally I would, you know, it's like, no, oh, I need more millions. But I'm telling you, I have direct knowledge that it was a laughable amount of money laughably small amount of money in a world where, like, everyone should at least be paid something of the same, but, like, but definitely the very, very top should not keep the most amount. And, like, especially having done the least amount of work, and like, I'm not pro actor or anything. I mean, honestly, like, whatever, capitalism's capitalism, right? Like, they got screwed. They signed contracts. They all wanted the movie at the time. They were young and hungry, and, like, that's on them. You know, we've all been there too. They want money, you know.
Well, if I'm reading between the lines, let me jump to a totally separate thing. There was a period where for a surprisingly long amount of time, there was no agreement on whether there would ever be another season of Rick and Morty. And nobody was afraid that there was going to be no Rick and Morty. It was just a case of, like, no agreement has happened on whether or not there's going to be more Rick and Morty. And then obviously that landmark deal happened afterwards. So if it is a marketing or negotiation tactic, seems like it's fair game.
Well, it is. I mean, look, it's not, as you just pointed out, it's not like a mistake that first there was no mention of a next season, and then all of a sudden there was a very complicated and almost unprecedented deal structure in place for them to do six more seasons.
Yeah, like 70 episodes, yeah.
Yeah, that took time and negotiation and figuring out how much is everyone going to get. And, like, that's a big gamble to say up front, we want this, and a big gamble for the studio, you know, or the network to say, we can agree to this, because it's a lot of years to spend on something that could fizzle out next year. And then the studio, I'm sure, has to still pay or play. So, like, there's so much going on there that, like, yeah, of course it was a negotiation tactic. They're no fools, as Mac would say. I'm no fool.
Mark Zarati, the CEO of Cinemark, the theater chain, told Deadline that, hey, thanks, MoviePass. His quote to Deadline was, MoviePass has helped create awareness of subscription moviegoing and really helped Cinemark sell a lot more of its own subscriptions. Movie Club is Cinemark's. It lets you watch one movie for $9 a month at Cinemark theaters, gives you some food discounts, some guest ticket bonuses, takes away your convenience fees, and it's up to 350,000 subscribers now. Also, with Movie Club, if you don't see a movie in a given month, the credit stays. You get to roll it over for up to 6 months.
So, separate thing. This has nothing to do with anything, but we watched Mission Impossible, and I watched Sorry to Bother You. I think both of those were AMC things. Hated everything about the experience. I hated seeing there being a VIP line. It just felt like all the joy.
VIP line?
All the joy of...
What?
Everything you
hate. What do you
hate?
Mean a VIP line?
Yeah, I want to get in a VIP line. They're
like early, get into your seat. Crap,
oh, you don't have assigned seats there.
Yeah, it might not be AMC. It might be in some other.
Mission
theater.
Impossible was
ArcLight. No. It was ArcLight. The ArcLight.
Oh, ArcLight's a travesty in every city.
Yes. I hated everything about being at AMC. Hated everything about the ArcLight thing. I hated everything about trying to make movies like flying on a plane. Nobody likes flying on a plane. It's awful. It's terrible.
Okay. All right.
I pledge my allegiance to Alamo Drafthouse and also Sky Cinemas, who's across the street from me because they're an independent
AMC
local
is
theater.
Fine. ArcLight
so
is...
You don't ever go on to Southwest in the A group? You always just wait and go, you know...
You save your money and...
Hey, man. Look,
In Brian's defense, I will say that the movies should not be like a flight experience, which is
no,
a horrendous
no, you're right.
experience.
You're absolutely right.
And people hate flying. And making a class system in flight travel is such like a gross thing to do. And it's made it even worse.
I'm just still confused. Like, I've never seen a VIP line to get into the movie theater.
That's one of the benefits at the ArcLight that they advertised was.
I've been to an ArcLight. I've never seen that.
I did not even
before.
See that because we bought the tickets.
It definitely said like you know, faster access and lines and all this crap. And
but it's
and
assigned seats at the ArcLight. Bullshit.
Well, that's fine.
Care?
But you get to get in earlier so that you can sit in your seat and watch advertisements ahead of the other guys.
They don't even show things on the screen. It's just like Rorschach tests.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm befuddled. Yeah. Weird. That's really dumb.
Yeah. All right. Somebody will clear this up at cordkillers@gmail.com.
Let's get to the dispatches from the front.
Yes.
I was not ready for this because we had another story here. Are we not? Okay.
Oh, we're skipping that. Yeah.
Yeah.
David Wells retired as CFO at Netflix. Who cares? On to the dispatches. From the front.
Okay. Boo-hoo. Oh, CFO retired. Grow up. I'm sure he'll land nicely on his golden parachute as he flings himself from the Netflix towers. Oh, whatever will he do now that he's retired? I hope he's okay.
Dispatches from the front.
Sorry, Bryce.
Ugh.
In response to the story about CBS adding local news to the CBS All Access app, possibly, Dave in Waco wrote in to say he hasn't watched local news in over 10 years. He says, it's not because I don't like the folks doing the news. Several of the people on both sides of the cameras are among my friends. I just can't justify wasting the time on what is mostly totally inconsequential to me.
So, We did get letters from people saying, like, look, man, I live in Oklahoma, and that literally saved my life. Local news, mm-hmm. They did awesome weather. They said a tornado is coming in your face right now. But on the flip side, my thought reading that letter was that, maybe there is a value to having some kind of main fire hose of information that everybody's on the same page with. But in Vegas during DEF CON, there was a dust storm that was incoming. And I saw on my phone the emergency alert system saying, dust storm, don't go outside. It's really, really bad. And just as I got into the elevator and I got down out of the elevator opens up and it's as though it's a Gregorian chorus of 1,000 phones all singing the emergency alert tone, but everybody ignoring it. And also Hanson's Mbop playing while women danced over blackjack tables, refusing to even, quite literally, there was an alert saying it's the end of the world, and everybody moved on like it mattered not at all. So I guess I agree with this guy now.
That's so you agree that local news is inconsequential because an alert in Las Vegas got ignored?
I'm saying that I saw a genuine emergency event happen. I saw an alternative to traditional local media saying this is happening right now and it's really important and you have to pay attention. And
no,
I saw
cared.
1,000 people all ignoring it and including and I saw half naked women dancing in bright fluorescent lights while Hanson Mbop played. So all of a sudden it really broke my brain. It was so surreal that it makes me wonder whether or not local news does matter after all.
It does. Local news does matter, and it matters also for poor people in impoverished areas who don't have phones, but many of them are able to get access to small televisions, old televisions. You know, I mean, at this point, TVs are especially older TVs you can come by in pawn shops for very cheap. Some people put out TVs on the curb when they get a new, better TV. You know, I think local news is very important.
We have three different topics going on here. Just allow me to point this out. We've got emergency information management.
Correct.
Which is about how to get, should it go over text message? Should it continue to go over broadcast airwaves? Doesn't matter if CBS All Access has your local news, if you can't afford to access CBS All Access, right? So that's the point Sean's making. Then we have the idea of local news versus local information management,
correct.
Right? Like local information management is a service that broadcast news can provide. But what I think Dave in Waco is talking about is I turn on the local news and it's all fear mongering about, you know, the chemicals under my sink and how a fire happened
local
somewhere,
man,
et cetera.
Just bought a chihuahua. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I got another email that says after Brian talked about not about liking the Apple TV that he used at Tom's house, that's me in your place, Tim wrote in to say he would not like, or he does not like the Apple TV remote. He says every time he presses the button for voice control, he just gives up before he does what he wants. He says the trackpad is the worst control for the device he's ever experienced.
Agreed.
He says he's always flying past what he wants to select or struggling to get it not to jump to something other than the movement I was doing. Maybe I believe all of that, but I also know that it was very intuitive and I had no problem the one time I used it at your place, Tom. But more importantly, it made me think of like back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of arguments about what was the right interface for a laptop, whether it was the eraser button on
the nub.
Or whether it was a trackpad or whatever. And everybody said that the UI was the most important thing when buying a laptop. But the data showed that pretty much everybody just got used to whatever they had. So it's like if your work assigned you a ThinkPad, then you got used to the nub. So I don't know how that plays in here, but I know that my experience was pretty good, but I'm also going to say that I think all of us adapt to whatever we're given.
I use a lot of different devices, right? What is this guy's name?
Tim.
Yeah. Tim, you're right, sir. He's right. This is a poorly designed, like the one for the previous Apple TV was a better design. This trackball situation, this like haptic pad situation, it's garbage. The sensitivity of this part that you have to like kind of pin, you know, press down to like make anything happen is garbage. The button placement is unintuitive, garbage. It's trash. It's badly designed. They should be ashamed of themselves. And this man is absolutely right in his frustration.
And I guess my counter argument is yes to all of that. Also, we have a long history of humans adapting to whatever we're given. And I'm going to suspect that it worked fine for me. I seem to figure it out pretty quick.
Hey, look, Sean just made Tim feel very good about himself because he was frustrated that we didn't hate the remote as much as you two do.
Yes. Well, I think that the point that Tim and I are trying to make is, or at least that I'm trying to make in response to Brian's point, is that is the crux of all innovation, right? Is that you have something, they released the first version, it was fine. Then they thought they released a better version of it. It's not as good as it could be, so they could just do better. And I think that Tim and I are just telling Apple to try harder and do better and stop being so goddamn basic all the time.
That works.
You're basic, Apple. That's what Sean and Tim think. I actually have no problem with the remote. I use it all the time. But, you know, I'm probably wrong. Mel says, I signed up for DirecTV Now for $10 a month for 3 months, and I can honestly say I'm very impressed. Very little buffering issues. I also think it's really not about price for cord cutting, but it's more about the no contract, the ease to sign up, change packages, and little to no equipment. I liked how I signed up for HBO with just one click, no customer service rep to try and sell me more plans. Again, very impressed. Don't know if I'll keep it after the deal, but I can tell you I'm most likely never going to go back to traditional cable with boxes and contracts. Never say never, but most likely not.
So this is what I loved about this letter is that it was one person's story of even considering going back to cable. And I think like DirecTV Now was one of the last of the alternative services that had a stigma about it of like, it's not quite where it needs to be yet. Like we're now at the point where all of the options are great. And I cannot picture anybody who goes to Sling or PlayStation View or DirecTV Now or any of them giving up and going back to cable. Sean, do you have an allegiance to one service or another for all your TV needs?
I mean, I really like YouTube TV, and that's what I'm using right now, right? Because I tried DirecTV Now, and I didn't love it. I tried it, like, I was an early, early adapter of it.
Yeah, it was
crap.
Did
not like
the
experience. And then I tried YouTube TV, and I really like that experience, and I use Google for, like, everything. Like, they own me and probably will have a clone of me in a couple of years. But I also don't have like if that went away, I would use another service. You know, I think it's wonderful that we have all these choices. And I think that I'll never, ever go back to cable ever.
Yep. Agreed. The Mike says, "Hey, Tom and Brian, can't believe it's been, I've been your boss for 4 years now. All the hard work you guys have put into the show is worth every penny in my book. You guys have talked throughout the years about what's basically, he's asking, what's the best site to find out where to watch things that you want to watch? And I know we've had different favorites at different times. Tom, what's our current favorite way to find out how to watch what you want, when you want, on whatever service?"
I don't know. I don't know what anyone else is, but I still use Just Watch. I've been using it for a long time, justwatch.com, and it's been solid. It tells me the things I need to know. So that's my current favorite. I know there's others out there. I'd be happy to hear some alternatives too.
Cool. I didn't know that existed. Justwatch.com, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And you can get the app for Android or iOS.
That's
what I always use. I just pop that app open.
Oh, I'm in because I am. That is a man. That is like a common problem. I'm so happy to hear that other people are always rifling around trying to figure out where the hell can I watch this.
Yeah, no
this
kidding.
And if you have the Amazon, I think Amazon and Google and Apple have searches for these things. So, like, I know on the Apple, if you say I want to find, show me The Office, it will give you some options sometimes.
That's the thing. Just Watch has everything in
right.
it. Whereas the devices, I always feel like they're not 100%, and there sure. might be an option that they're not including.
But some
they're
of not, them have
and I,
it.
And I know, feel like they're not updated properly a lot of the times.
Yeah.
Where it'll say, like, you can watch it here, and then I go there, and I can't watch it, or it used to be free, but now it's behind a paywall, and, you know, how many times can I pay to rent Idle Hands before I should just buy it?
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll find out, though. Hey, Sean, this has been great having you on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been fine. It's been a good experience.
It's been fine. Yeah, put that on our movie poster.
It's been fine. thank you. This has been awesome. Thank you for having me. And I wish to talk about more Preacher.
So I'm sitting here, I'm looking at bunny ears out of the corner of my eyes. I'm seeing the Chiron go across that says, thoughts and prayers found to be cancerous. Ophthalmologists, glasses are sexy. Oh, hey, look, there's Macaulay Culkin
hey,
on the Modern
you.
Rogue.
There you go. Goodbye.
Everybody go to bunnyears.com. It's freaking great. It's amazing.
The color of the month is asphyxiation.
Amber alert, spoon, last seen running away with a dish.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll kill your cords again next week.
Hey guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors. Look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
There's
name in pixels on the
internet.
There's some
classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode and be one of these amazing people. Like this
be
one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.